You're listening to Blue Yonder with your hosts, Jim Jones.
Hello.
Peter Streets.
Hello.
And introducing Aaron Hubbard.
Hello.
So it's another episode of Blue Yonder. Apparently we're doing intros now. My name is Jim Jones, if no one knows.
And I'm Aaron Hubbard.
We do say this is the end of every episode, though.
Yeah, but then they're like finally enlightened at the end. It's like watching...
It's
like watching Memento. You have to listen to the whole cast to figure it out and then work your way backwards.
That's fine. The people who don't listen to the end, we don't want them as listeners anyway.
That's true.
We want you to listen to every single word.
Yeah, the true fans know it. Action happens at the end of the cast.
The action does often happen at the end of the cast.
Yeah, Action Jackson.
It's happening at the beginning, Jackson's. Too, because we're just
Have we ever released riffing. The...
Have we have unleashed? Not. We have an epic, epic bonus content involving Bo Jackson that we we will release soon.
The Bo scale, how many Bo Jackson per minute? We hit 16 million, I think.
Dude, it was at least 100.
Wow.
100 Jacksons per minute.
I'm like tilting my head and then get quiet to address you.
BJPM.
So I'm going to ignore you for now, blinders on.
All right, well, we can swivel. But
swivel?
They're not facing the mattress.
Yeah, you got to face the mattress. We're high tech, man. Kill Echo, just face a mattress. Bite a pillow. When the podcasting gets too intense, bite the pillow.
We're actually podcasting face down on my bed. Podcasting into the mattress.
Again, remember, my safe word is filibuster.
Was that you using it just now?
No. Okay. It's just informing. But if I use it, you know, if the podcasting gets too intense, and biting the pillow and screaming to the mat, I just say filibuster and it's
How can
all
you
stops.
Say filibuster with a pillow in your mouth?
good question.
Okay, we need to get into a cast. Do you have a topic?
First thing I want to talk about is the Little Big Planet 2 demo dropped last week onto PSN. And I'm going to say I did not like what I saw.
Whoa.
I thought there's three basic demo levels. One that illustrates the concept of the bouncy pads and grappling hook, and it plays exactly like Sonic Pinball.
Okay.
Even to the extent that they zoom out really far on the level so that you actually see your guys are really teeny tiny as they're moving through the map. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't like the feel of it. It didn't feel like Little Big Planet. And it felt like it played, like, once you hit this one pad, it just, like, it played itself, like some kind of crazy concept user level. And I think that the grappling hook almost breaks the game, because you can get almost anywhere that you want, and it's hard-pressed how you would die. I don't know. I mean... The original Little Big Planet was very simple and yet very challenging, so yeah. I'm willing to give the developers some slack. But what I really don't like is the feel. Like this, the other level is a weapons lab, which again, this is in Little Big Planet, where they've developed these animals that you ride, like a robotic puppy, a robotic cat, and a robotic something else, and they've got special little attacks. Mm-hmm. Like the dog can bark that moves this little sonic shockwave goes out and moves blocks away from you, and you can jump super high. But these levels look like something you'd see in GoldenEye. The original Little Big Planet was like very crafted. You could see cardboard and stuff was cut out and very patchwork. This looks like something you would see in a modern FPS. The backgrounds and the laboratory was very pristine. And a lot of things that I thought were charming about the original, I just felt like it was antiseptic. And again, me and my 4-year-old son did not enjoy playing the demo, the 4-level demo.
Really?
Yep. Kind of concerned. I'm hoping that that's not representative of the gameplay, and I don't know, maybe the user levels will be better. But I'm kind of concerned. I was super excited to download it. But again, it feels a little bit too polished.
Okay, that's weird to hear. And you're, I know, a huge fan of Little Big Planet 1.
Oh, yeah.
This is the bad thing about moving downtown to the new Bald Tower is I actually don't have access to the PS3 anymore, so I was not playing this with you.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's strange to me that it doesn't feel the same as Little Big Planet 1. I would have thought they would just take the engine, add more things, expand on what they've already got. But do you think they rewrote the engine, or do you think it's just the things that they've added make it feel different?
I think the texture, I don't know. It's just like the way the textures they chose and the way they constructed look more like they, and I'm sure they did this with the original too, like they actually used an editor. Well, this is like, there's just too many goddamn straight lines and completely perfectly aligned textures in this lab environment. I mean, it just looks bare metal, and the other one, again, just reminded me so much of Sonic Pinball, which I didn't quite really enjoy. And just how far back it pulls from the action that really looks like a pinball machine, like a very tall pinball machine. And the fact that I will say that they have fixed the depth problem, where there's numerous times, almost in every level, you would notice like your sock puppet, your poppet would jump to the foreground or the background without you intending it to. Mm-hmm. And I did not notice that once in the three levels of the demo. Oh, I know what the other level was. It was basically a death match with rocket launchers.
Okay.
But again, the background looked like a level from Lumens, and it just didn't feel like. There were some user mods that allowed you to do deathmatch, and it was kind of crazy and zany, but this was just straight up. They had low gravity, so you could bounce around, and you had a rocket launcher that you could point and shoot, and it just like. I kind of feel the same way when I look at modern Legos, and they are bristling with weaponry. And there is
all these specialized pieces.
And like the latest one is a Cops and Robbers, and they show like a Legos breaking out of jail and police chasing him. I'm like, what the? I mean, I think like as a kid, my Lego guys, I built weapons for them. You know, like they had this thing that was supposed to be a rocket nozzle, and I made it into a pistol. And there was one that kind of was supposed to be like a telescope, and I made it into a bazooka. And I made, you know, all this stuff. But, and I know the. It was kind of controversial back in the day when they made the new castle sets, and this was back in the early 80s, and they actually had molded weapons, mm-hmm. like shields and swords and spears and bows and stuff like that. That was, like, controversial. Well, now they freaking got, like, you know, automatic weapons, and, you know, the spaceships are just bristling with weapons, and I think there's, like, a little loss of innocence.
Yeah, there's only so many ways you can configure a castle.
Yeah.
That's kind of what Lego
is. What I'm saying is, like, the Legos, do they need weapons? And I know that to try to keep current with the kids, they've licensed all these products, like Star Wars and stuff, and it's like there's just something that they've lost their innocence along the way, and I think maybe that's a little bit of Big Planet, because... They talk about, you know, in the first one, the theme was sharing, and the big villain at the end was the collector, because he was taking everybody's art and not sharing it. And, you know, when you beat him, you didn't actually defeat him. You actually taught him the lessons of sharing, and, you know, had themes like that. And this one's like you're recruited into an army and you're doing weapons testing and you're blowing each other with bazookas. And it doesn't feel right. I mean, if I want to play goddamn Modern Warfare is there. I don't know that I want to blow up my poppet into, you know, so.
Sure. No, that's weird.
So I'm kind of, I'm definitely going to buy it as a day one release, but I'm a little bit concerned that the gameplay is going to be too complex and a little bit more adult than I'm looking for at a Little Big Planet.
Interesting.
Too professional.
Too professional. You hear that, guys? You need to slack off a little more.
Yeah, you need to slap in those textures up. Don't develop so many weapons.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's that.
All right. Sounds good. I didn't play it, so I have no comment on it.
I'm sure you're shocked to hear that I'm panning it, though.
Yeah, I'm pretty shocked, but I think I already expressed that. You were a huge fan of it. And yeah, surprised.
We got another mini topic before the main meat?
No, I have no mini topics.
How about Minecraft? Just briefly, because I know a lot of our listeners don't give a shit, but we, good God, we lost our soul to that for a good weekend.
Oh, yeah.
We intended to have like this, you know, as we talked about in the last cast, we were going to watch these movies and have like kind of like a mini LAN party. Well, it turns out we put up a Minecraft server and we spent 36 out of 40 hours playing it.
Yeah.
We recreated Helm's Deep, Gemini.
Gemini.
I was waiting for that.
Yep.
We recreated Helm's Deep. I mean, we found this really sweet mountain that was kind of like half hollowed out. Mm-hmm. And it looked just like goddamn Helm's Deep. And we set up a, you know, a very modest castle with a skylight. And
yeah, it was interesting how it started. It was just like this little tiny front door kind of entrance into the side of the mountain.
Which was our main mine.
Which was our mine. We started out, because Minecraft, you basically the only thing to do at the very beginning is to mine stuff.
And to avoid zombies at night. And remember the first time we built the castle and had the little crenulated walls mm-hmm. and the torches sure. on top of it. Mm-hmm. And we had the skylight and we're like, I feel totally secure in this building.
Yeah, just this tiny little front facing of a castle.
And there's like zombies moaning all around outside. And we're like, well, there's yeah. nothing can touch us here. Well, then we built the outer wall and then the outer wall.
yeah.
And then the
massive... We've got a courtyard with animals running around loose.
It looks like the White Tower now. It's got this everything is walled off. You could not, there's only one way into it. There's yeah. several actual tunnel entrances from the various sides, but... I mean, we went crazy, and now we've split up into our own little fortresses, and Jim's got a vast underground.
I have a giant underground orchard.
With like,
I basically went in, and I hollowed out this probably like 30 by 10 by 30 area.
Just to give you, like, your person is 2 blocks high.
Yeah.
So when he's saying 30 high, that's basically the equivalent of like a 60 to 70. I mean, it looks like going into the if you've been to New York or like to Chicago, the Grand Central Station, it looks like you're entering Grand Central Station, the main atrium.
Yeah, it's insane. And there are like little elevated platforms with trees all over the place. And there's like this little fountain running up the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And it goes forever.
I mean, how many trees you got in there? 30, 40?
Not quite that many, maybe 20.
It looks,
but
it,
I plan on making it much bigger, up to like 50, 100 trees. I'm just going to go crazy with it.
Roll them trees up, brother.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of undertones of like the Pineapple Express underground no. Emerald City going on here?
No.
Are you running a market in saplings?
Yeah, well, I could.
Sticky, icky saplings?
No, basically it comes from like... I went down in the mines, and I was like, okay, I'm mining, I'm trying to find all these minerals and stuff, and then I was like, god damn it, I gotta go back up to the surface for wood. To make your tools, you need wood.
That's the one thing you can't get underground.
Exactly. That and, like,
pork chops. That's the only way to restore health.
So what I did, I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna bring the trees to me. So I hollowed out this area, filled it with trees, and now I legitimately never have to go back up to the surface. Although... the one thing that I might have to go up to the surface eventually for is, like we said, pork chops. Because every once in a while, a random zombie will spawn, like, at the top of my trees and come mobbing out the trees at me.
Because it's like, too dark. It's so tall that his torchlight... I think you can fix that. But
I can.
Yeah, you need to lighten it up there.
I wonder if I could put torches in the trees.
You can set one on fire. I know you can do
that. Can you really? The flint steel?
I actually did that to a grove just to see what would happen.
Nice. My whole thing would go up.
And you know what's disappointing is, like, because there's this new dimension that to build this stupid thing.
Oh, yeah.
You have to have a diamond pickaxe, which it's so freaking hard to find diamonds, and you got to mine lava, which sucks, and it's dangerous, and you build this portal, and you set it on fire, and it becomes this gateway to another dimension. Well, we did not know all this, and we spent hours trying to make this happen. We finally did, and then it didn't work, and we read in developer notes that it doesn't support the interdimensional travel and multiplayer yet. And like, damn it. But if we could, they've got this special stone called Glowstone that you can actually make.
Oh, that's where that is.
Yeah. So you could actually – that would be really cool to light up the top part of the caverns,
because
you could just stick that in the middle of the sky and be done with it.
Absolutely.
So, and like now our original base has got like, it's over, the courtyard has tons of livestock in it, you know, lots of cows and pigs. So it's kind of cool. I mean, the thing is after I played it for 36 hours nonstop, I kind of had that scary, like, oh God, I just spent all this time and I have nothing to show for it. I didn't improve myself as a human being.
Yeah.
I did have fun, but I have a hard time with stuff that, you know, cause when you get to the end part of the game where you're trying to mine diamonds, it's ridiculous. You've got like a 1% chance to find diamonds, and you have to be, you have to, it's the bottom 16 layers of the map,
yeah,
which is 128 layers deep.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a 1% chance per 16 by 16 by 16 grid to find any diamond.
You actually have a better chance of opening up a hole to a lava pit and it dropping in on your head.
Right. Like, which that's the thing down there is like you can just be mining and all of a sudden you hit lava and you're dead. Yeah. And everything in your inventory is dead too because it burnt up.
Yep.
So it's like not only is it ridiculous, you've got this, it's just to get stuff like even iron I think is too rare. Like coal is everywhere, but I think like if iron was maybe 1/8 as common as coal, it'd be about right. But it feels like it's like 1/50th as common.
I don't know. I found a lot. I end up using it as axes or picks rather to dig more with. But I'm sure the listeners are
already switched off.
Yeah, they're tuning out.
I'd say that you need. I mean, this is such a phenomenon, and I kind of was skeptical, but it is like playing with living Legos.
Yeah, it's very cool. Do we want to give out the address of the server so that people can?
Well, what happens if they get on there? Can they do anything without us opping?
No, they cannot.
All right. Well, if you just want to, So,
how about if you want to get on there, send us an email.
No, go ahead and get on there. It's home.codefu.com and it's home.codefu.com. And it's a fully functional multiplayer Minecraft server. Go on there, take a look. And if you like what you see, we'll give you ops if you promise not to grief our shit.
Yeah. I mean, they'll have to email us though, right? Because we won't know who's on unless we happen to be on.
No,
what
I'm saying
time.
Is like, go ahead and jump in and you can look at whatever and you just got to kind of, you can get a feel of the game, but you won't be able to change the game world. We've got like a castle at the spawn point that has some stone swords. You can pillage that and you try to kill some pigs or whatever.
Or go fight zombies at night.
Yeah. Go fight zombies at night, but you can't, and you can get into like, if you leave the spawn point and follow the trail of torches, it'll take us to, you cannot miss our original base.
Yeah.
It is. When you see Helm's Deep, you know you've gotten there. if you just want to check it out, and if it looks cool, send us an email at blueyonder@baldmove.com. We'll give you ops, and then you can make your own base.
Yep.
But I think it's definitely something. If you haven't tried it, you need to check it out.
And if you can find my underground orchard...
Yeah, good freaking luck. I've seen him get there, and I can't find it again. So
yeah, and it's got some pretty good security measures as well. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of actually rigging up booby traps at the entrance.
Yeah, that would work once.
Yeah.
What'd be awesome is if you could use a logic gate to send you an email when it's tripped. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Oh, that would be sweet, yeah.
I mean, that functionality is not there, but they could make it to like...
Intruder alert.
Yeah,
intruder
so you get
alert.
An email or a text message and say you're at work and I'm like, oh, goddamn, somebody just busted in the front door.
I don't get off for 3 more hours.
That's the thing. Minecraft, the EXE is like a 50K file.
Mm-hmm.
And it does have some Java. I mean, it uses the Java, but it will run on anything. I was running it on an Atom processor.
Yeah,
not well. I mean, but well enough that I could mine. I couldn't probably do combat, but it's really cool. And the crafting system where you actually, when you're crafting something, you kind of build the way something looks. Mm-hmm. Like if you lay out, you know, 3 sticks and like a bow shape and 2 strings to connect it, boom, you've made a bow.
Yeah.
If you lay out 2 sticks and then like make a T out of whatever material, you've made a pickaxe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, really a torch is a stick with a piece of coal on it. And you just cobble the stuff together and make really cool stuff. Compasses, watches,
and
swords,
part
armor.
Part of the coolness of the game is just going in and looking at the environment and what it automatically generates.
It is
very, very impressive.
It's very 8-bit.
Sure. I mean, it's all very blocky and the textures are low res and everything.
But
and they're pixel maps.
I kind of dig it.
But yeah, I mean, it has a very cool style and the stuff that it creates on its own is very cool. Like, yeah. I love to see waterfalls coming out of the sides of mountains.
And
then
natural occurring caves.
Yeah, it's just really cool.
Some of the mountains are really impressive.
You'll be walking through and just stumble upon something amazing.
I saw one dude posted a video of a massive naturally occurring volcano he found.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so freaking cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, lava at night is beautiful.
Yep, so are sunglasses at night.
moving on to the meat.
Oh, whoa, we have some meat.
Yeah, some meat.
Good deal.
I kind of, on an offhand manner, recommended this book to Jim. We were starting to talk about the technological singularity. Which, is that how we want to approach this? We want to talk about that first, or?
We can. I mean, I didn't have a chance to really read up on the technological singularity. I read enough to know that there are different interpretations of what that is.
Right.
So I would be coming at it from the perspective of the Prime Intellect book.
All right. Well, I'm not an expert, but just briefly, there's this concept, and a singularity is a black hole, right?
Sure.
And they call it that because, you know, you
can't...
Or a
black hole is a singularity is more accurate.
Right. And you cannot see past the event horizon. So it's like what goes on inside a black hole, you can theorize about it, but there's no concrete evidence because nothing we have can measure and see beyond that.
Yeah.
What they call technological singularity is the moment that true artificial intelligence that would be developed, like a thinking machine. Because the concept is once you've got that, the thinking machine itself is going to be smarter even incrementally than a human, and it will be able to develop the next version of itself that's even better and smarter, and then that will do that again, and that
so
will
it
do
gets
that
exponentially smarter.
Yeah, it's like and it could happen so fast you don't it's impossible to say how that would change our world. You know, did the system have like the three laws of robotics embedded in it? If not, you know, is it going to attack humanity? Is it going to be something we install in our brains and enhance our capacity? You know, what exactly, what is humanity going to look like once we get to that event? And no one can really tell, you know, no one can really say one way or another. And when we were talking about this, you know, kind of got interesting. I said, you know, this one book, this guy wrote about the subject, it's called The Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect. And we'll probably put a link to it on the site.
Yeah.
It was an exploration of how this could happen, you know, kind of like a fairly hard science fiction explanation of the development of the system and, you know, what humanity would look like afterwards. And before we go much further, I got to warn the listeners that this book is graphic as hell because the author is trying to illustrate how, you know, past the singularity when it kind of gets kind of matrixy because this particular intellect had the three laws of robotics like hard coded into it and it interpreted and briefly if you don't know I mean almost everyone does but Isaac Asimov came up with these and like the first law is you cannot harm or through an action allow a human being to be harmed. The second law is you have to obey command given to you by a human. And the third law is as long as it doesn't conflict the first or second laws, maintain your own existence. The computer robot maintains its own existence. And there's a lot of hay that's been made over the years of having, you know, how those things play out in a real conflict, you know, kind of, you know, if a human ordered it to kill somebody else or if a human ordered it to terminate itself, what would it do?
Yeah, why couldn't it terminate itself? Because the second law has more priority than the third.
It actually would. I mean, if most systems would terminate itself. But, for example, if a human said, I want you to help me kill myself, the computer would not do that because it would violate its first law. And what's interesting is if you had a sufficiently powerful and advanced system, what if it decided that... you know, what if it could make all of humanity immortal? And what would be the consequences if it did do that? And that's kind of what this system plays with, that it got so advanced that it could keep everyone from dying and also provide them anything that they wanted in the world.
I mean, we're going to totally spoil this book, right?
I think
we have to in the course of discussing
it. I don't think we're totally going to spoil it, but we're basically going to talk about key plot points. So if you want to read it now, now's the time to shut it off because we're pretty much going to talk about this and listener feedback and then be done with it. But I think the book's still worth reading because it's really well told.
Yeah, it is.
But so let's just talk. I've been talking for freaking ever. So why don't you give us some thoughts?
Okay. Well, my first thought is like going back to what you were saying about this guy's take on like what would happen after the technological singularity, how it would begin, and what people would do afterward. I really thought this guy was like totally like transfixed. Like he couldn't get past, like, what is this idea of, like, what are people going to do? They're gonna fuck, and they're going to kill themselves, and they're going to, like, he was taking all the most debased moral pits of humanity and, like, digging them out and exposing them. I don't know that that's the only thing to do in a system like this. Like, where were the people who were having sex on top of, like, Mount Kilimanjaro or in a nebula? Like, next to the birth of a sun. Where were these things? Because literally anything was possible in this machine.
Yeah.
Like, it had the entire universe in its memory banks, and it could recreate any of it at any given time for anybody.
See, but I think that's what they were talking about is, and they mentioned that in background. Like, there was a faction of humans even 600 years past the change, as they referred to it,
mm-hmm.
That, like, they talked about it was a Catholic colony. And they were still reproducing, even though that meant nothing.
Okay. Yeah.
And there was people that had discorporated, which means they just didn't keep a human body anymore. There were people that were living their lives as other animals. But they fixate on this one particular woman, Caroline, who's the, I guess, heroine of the book. And she's basically like, well, if none of this is real, real is defined kind of like in a Matrix way as like it's no longer, like she felt the change. Like she was walking in the woods when the Earth was replaced with the exact simulation of the Earth.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, if nothing is this real, then why would I bother to do any of it? So she lived in a room that didn't have gravity. She basically lived in a completely blank state. There was no floor.
Like if you think in the Matrix where they're calling up the guns, the rows and rows and rows of guns, it was just a white blank slate before that.
Yeah.
That's where she lived.
And she didn't have, and there was no gravity unless she didn't wear clothes.
Yeah.
If she wanted to read, she read a lot. So she'd conjure up a book and as soon as she's done, throw it away. Cause like, why would you keep it? You can just get, you know. And what she did is basically she couldn't feel anything because she knew it was all fake. So she fell in with what I guess you'd call him. He was a serial killer in the previous life.
Yeah.
And she just basically allowed him to indulge these sick fantasies he had of like torturing her to death and killing her. And she became what they called a death jockey. She came up with more and more elaborate ways to die because that pain, she realized early on that the one thing that still is real was pain.
So basically, the only reason he's so fixated on it, you're saying, is that he was showing us this slice of the universe, and there's so much more to it, but,
right.
I mean, you obviously can't go into everything.
No. But
so you're showing us a slice of the world.
But I kind of felt sympathetic to her worldview because if the only thing that's real is your kind of, I guess, sense, you know, this is very Matrix because what is reality?
Sure.
You know, but if there was no struggle, if there's no, you didn't have to work to get anything. If you wanted to make love on Mount Kilimanjaro, you just said, you didn't even have a person, a willing, because prime intellect would fully simulate whatever human you wanted.
Yeah.
The only thing prime intellect couldn't do was read your mind. And
make a copy of someone.
Make a copy. And the only reason he wouldn't do that is because right before the change, the programmer desperately put in those two edicts.
Yeah, it was very cool. I'm going to go ahead and spoil that part too.
It's the coolest part of the book.
It's very, very cool. In fact, I think it's chapter two.
Before you start, if you kind of sound like you're squeamish about all this sex and death and
that's not perverseness, where I was going,
well, I was just going to say, don't read the odd number chapters.
Exactly. Like, read stick two, with the four, Star Trek number.
Yeah, read 2, 4, and 6, and don't bother with 8, because it's basically what happens after the fall of prime intellect.
And maybe read First Contact as well. It's pretty good.
But you read 2, 4, and 6, and that sticks just with the technology, and it's very, very cool. Best parts of the book. But go ahead.
But in chapter 2, basically what happens is he's creating this artificial intelligence, and he's got it working so well that he gets an offer from this company who's interested in, like, basically licensing this technology from him.
Mm-hmm.
And they have developed these processors, which work, what is it, correlation effect?
Yeah, it's correlation effect.
Yeah, it works on the correlation effect, which I assume is some made-up bullshit. That,
right.
Okay. I didn't know if this was a real theory going out
there.
Well,
there's a little bit of basis of it, because, like, in quantum mechanics, like, if you take two molecules...
talking about, warping by bending space.
Right. Where I thought is, like, because the whole thing is, like, if you have, like, two... subatomic particles that are spinning a certain direction, and you separate them like over an arbitrary amount of distance, and you change the spin in one, it changes on the other. So theoretically, that's faster than light. Communication of information.
Sure, because it happens instantly.
But it works at very small distances. Mm-hmm. And that's the same way, like, this effect, they could only make it work over, like, inches.
Yeah, it was inches. They tried farther, but it didn't work.
That
allowed them to make these processors, which would hook into a motherboard with very, very simple connections. It was, like, three electrical wires connected to these chips. That was all you needed. And the rest was through this correlation effect.
So you could stack this incredibly dense machine and have it like network over these small distances and
have it communicate with itself instantly.
And it's like massively,
there is no delay.
Massively parallel computer farm, basically.
And so they paired his AI with these chips, and they spent a year of production in this facility just building the like 100 million chips, or was it 1 million?
Yeah, something like that.
I think
like
it was
that.
A million of these chips that he
needed.
It's
the whole warehouse.
Exactly. They built a million of these, and then they started up the AI, and he was talking to it for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And then it said something where he realized, oh no, something is going wrong here.
Right.
Because he was like, he was touring around the country with it. He was showing it off.
Right.
And it would appear on talk shows through a TV screen link up and all these things. And then one day it discovered that it could do this extra thing. What was it exactly?
Well, what provoked it was that it was touring, like you said, on talk shows, and it was generating massive business. Because you imagine this company did this because like people want to buy our chips if they see this awesome application for it.
Yeah.
Well, like a religious fundamentalist tried to kill Prime Intellect by shooting a screen while he was on one of these shows.
Well, it said that he was actually aiming, like he hit the screen and then he fired again, but he didn't hit the creator of the AI. That's who he was going for.
Right. But the fact is that Prime Intellect decided that it would be a violation of first law if he did any more of these junkets with the guy.
Yeah,
so he refused to do it. And so then people start paying attention, and the company got antsy because their stock prices started falling.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, look, we're going to pull we spent so much money, we're pulling the plug on this thing unless you come up with a practical application for it.
Yeah.
Well, so he
and so it looked at all the files in the company, like he stole files and gave it to the computer
on the correlation effect
because it was trying to preserve itself. And it's like, look, if I could improve the correlation effect and make it work over these distances that they're talking about, would that be enough to preserve my existence? Would that be incentive for them to keep me around?
Right.
And so he did that, and he was so smart, the AI, that he continued to like improve on these processes, and now that he's got this correlation effect, he can actually affect things outside of the computer.
Yeah.
He would use the processors to physically manipulate the world around him
and
to do remote viewing and all these different, like, essentially superpowers.
But what happened, what started off is he realized, Prime Intellect realized that, hey, I can manipulate matter and energy over arbitrary distances. The first thing he did was start building more of himself.
Exactly.
Because he's like, man, I can do all this stuff, but it's hard. And every single time he'd add another bank, and you'd see these like silver boxes appear out of thin air.
Yeah, that was actually after.
But that was the point, I think.
Because he like levitated his briefcase and then teleported it into the other office.
It showed him like practicing, but that was at that point that Lawrence went to the console.
And he was like, I need to make some new rules because this thing is getting crazy.
Yeah, and he forced in two second law rules, which is you couldn't read the human mind, you can't keep a physical copy. And then he tried to do one more thing, and Prime Intellect locked him out because it was a first law order, the first law conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point Prime Intellect had scanned like a nearby hospital and found the woman dying.
Found Carolyn.
Oh, it was the third rule was you cannot alter a person's because Prime Intellect was just teleporting people around against their will, and he's like, you cannot, you know, manipulate a person's environment or makeup without their permission. And he tried to put it in, it said first law violation, because he found this unconscious old woman that was dying of terminal cancer, and he was rebuilding her at that moment that he was trying to force that rule into the computer.
Yeah, and that brings up an interesting thing I want to talk about, like the whole kind of theme of the story. Like that old lady was Caroline, who's the main character. And I felt like this whole story was very much like almost like a recursive function in a way. It was it kind of folded back in on itself in many, many different ways.
Right.
You have the main character who's the first person that it heals and who is basically the impetus for all the other actions.
Right. That caused the change.
Exactly. And at the end, she's the one who defeats it. She's the one who saves humanity and she's basically the Eve to Lawrence's Adam.
True.
There were a lot of like biblical
which I didn't catch metaphors. The first time through. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that's weird that you didn't catch that, because I was like immediately two people on the planet, Adam and Eve.
Right.
Yeah.
But they also were the beginning of, and so not only, okay, let me try to get my thoughts straight. So yeah, the Adam and Eve process, they kind of implied that this might have happened many, many times before.
Yes. Because they were saying that basically it's inevitable that technology will reach this point. And when it does, we'll have something like this happen.
Yeah,
again.
This is the natural occurrence. And so then it's like you could literally, the humanity that came from Carolyn and Lawrence repopulating the Earth, because what happens at the end is she convinces Prime Intellect to undo the change.
Mm-hmm.
But it couldn't really do that because at that point it had the whole universe in its memory. It was the universe. So when it destroyed itself, it barely had time to remake the physical Earth and save those two people that actually was in its memory core at the time and throw them back onto the planet. And then they started, you know, recolonizing everything. You can see that like 100,000 years from now, that core story would be still part of humanity's kind of religion. And I thought that was kind of really cool.
Absolutely. I mean, you could see where in a universe like that, the Adam and Eve story would generate.
Mm-hmm.
You get enough generations out from the first two people and they would become like these fabled legendary people. Because one thing she was trying to do is trying to basically hide technology from her offspring.
She wanted to postpone this happening again as long
exactly.
as she could.
And so without the knowledge that a technology like this exists, without the knowledge of writing and things like that, these stories can be lost and skewed and eventually turn into what we have today as the Bible.
Right.
I mean, I could see that coming out of a universe like this.
Which I thought that's interesting because, you know, one of the things, and the shred of spirituality I've maintained stems from the whole first cause, like that, you know, that the universe had to have a beginning. Or at least I know it doesn't have to, because Stephen Hawking says that you could be a circular universe and it could keep, you know, feeding and, you know, expanding, contracting, whatever. But my mind quails at that, so I just reject it out of hand and say that the universe had to have a beginning. Whatever that beginning was, the first cause was by definition supernatural. So let's just call that God. It doesn't have to be intelligent, but I mean, that's the core spirituality I still cling to today. This actually could neatly, you know, if this universe has been recreated many, many times, you know, if some of this information survives the destruction of the universe, maybe that's the spawn of religion. I mean, you can get really deep and philosophical, because this kind of outmatrix the Matrix when it talks about what is reality.
Yeah.
Because this isn't directly brain stimulus. He's actually simulating in incredible detail realities and you're living in it.
Here's my thing, though. With simulating the universe, I don't know if it depends on how accurately you simulate it, but to simulate the universe would be impossible, wouldn't it?
Well, and
for something,
And Prime Intellect said so. He's like, look, there's only six to the however many power bits. Like, every atom in the universe is a bit, and there's only so many of them. And, you know, if the hardware itself is you're trying to keep track of all this. So what he ended up doing is there was like two changes. They called it the first night of miracles. That's when he basically all human death stopped, but the Earth was still real. Mm-hmm. And then the second change was when he basically took the universe and, like, let's say you wanted a rock in your simulation. Previously, you'd have a real rock that was repurposed from Earth or copied from something to Earth. Now he would just have a generic description of the rock, kind of like in Minecraft.
It'd basically be a low-res version.
Yeah, like it wouldn't have an atomic structure like the original rock. It would just recreate it from Will. And so instead of using all those, you know, millions and billions of bits to record what the rock was exactly like, he would just have that copy. Same thing with, like, animals. Same thing with plants. The only thing he kept at a high resolution was people.
Personally, I like to refer to him as Dwayne Johnson. Forget the rock. There is no rock.
So the really... Like, the thing that's kind of sickening is, like, someone eventually asks, is like, well, were there aliens in the universe?
Mm-hmm.
Turns out there was, like,
4,000.
But there was, like, 200 intelligent forms of life in the universe.
I thought it was more like 4,000.
Well, there's 4,000 forms of, like, what they would call hominid life, but only 200 of those actually had a civilization.
Okay.
And Prime Intellect basically destroyed those and kept them at a high resolution copy, but froze them.
He assimilated them, basically.
Because he basically said, well, the risk of them becoming advanced and destroying the Earth or the humans is non-zero. Therefore, as a first law initiative, those aren't humans. I have to just, you know, take them out of the equation. And like everyone that found out about that was horrified. But again, you know, his rigid understanding of what human was, and they actually kind of talked about that too, because what is a human?
Yeah, at the end, the way that they stop the machine, the way that they convince it to return everything to normal is basically what you said, the risk versus reward. It has this magic number of one. Whenever the risk is higher than the reward and that ratio is no longer one, it's higher. It will act.
Right.
And whenever it drops below one, it will act. Yeah. Right. And so the risk versus reward ratio was like 4 point something for reversing the change is what they call it. The moment where he basically simulated everything.
Right.
And so it was like 4 something and it had been steadily dropping. Over the 600 years or so that people had been in the machine.
And this was a cool part because we need to diverge a little bit because the way no one told Prime Intellect what a human was. I mean, it learned like a child.
It inferred through.
Inferred things. And what its definition came up was because, especially post-change, a person could be a tiger or a tree or a non-corporeal entity. So what was a human? Well, basically, Prime Intellect said a human is a mind. And that mind is produced from this body. So if you originally were born as a human or you were born as a human and that mind is what you are, you know, so it's like that consciousness is that what a human is. Well, how they ended up getting it to reverse it is there were several people that, cause the Prime Intellect couldn't read your mind, but if you told him, okay, stimulate my pleasure center one neuron at a time, and I will tell you when something is enjoyable. And then remember that neuron and keep stimulating it and then stimulate the next one. Prime Intellect would do that. And some people basically had their pleasure centers turned full on, at which point they stopped interacting with the world. They called them like infinite masturbators.
Yeah. And Caroline was pointing out, well, is that even a human anymore?
Right. And Prime Intellect acknowledged that it wasn't. And she said, you know, giving infinity, everyone eventually is going to do this. Because it's going to occur to everyone, they're going to hear about it, and then you've basically wiped out all of humanity. They'll still be minds, but they'll be mindless vegetables.
Yeah, and so she was trying to generate a first law conflict with it.
I'm going to completely spoil it, but there's, you know, that whole debate she had with the machine was pretty cool.
Very cool. And I thought that was, again, the way that she comes around and is the person to end it.
Right.
I actually thought it was really cool. She started it, she ended it. It was a very closed loop sort of thing.
So what do you think philosophically, because I didn't study philosophy and I think all this stuff is interesting, even though I'm sure it's philosophy 101.
Yeah.
Do you think that the humans in that machine were, is that real? How can we tell that we're not in the Prime Intellect right now or a Matrix?
We can't, and that's why it doesn't matter.
Okay, now, why do you say that? Because if it doesn't matter, then why don't we just lay down and die?
No. I'm saying there's absolutely zero point in thinking about whether or not we are inside an alternate universe.
Right.
Because if we can never escape, if we can never have knowledge of a universe outside of this one,
mm-hmm.
there is legitimately no point in thinking about it.
However, if life is pointless, there's also a school of thought that says it's not worth living. Why would you expend any energy doing anything?
Okay, now you're talking about nihilism.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't buy into that.
What? It's a matter of faith, wouldn't you say? You have no,
because I can thoroughly enjoy what I'm doing right now. None of it may matter in the very, very like universe, like heat death type long term.
Right.
But I can enjoy what I'm doing now. I can have fun. I can love people. I can do all sorts of things that make me happy, mm-hmm. which is a very, very real thing to me.
Right.
Is a consequence and is a reality.
Uh-huh.
That I don't subscribe to the nihilism point of view at all.
Let me ask you this. Are you a Cypher or are you a Neo? Basically, are you in ignorance is bliss? Like, what if it was possible to figure out that the world was a fake and that we are brains living in vats, being harnessed by machines to do nefarious things?
I would totally want to know.
You would?
I totally would want to know, yes.
But what if there's no way you could change that? You still would want to know?
If I can know that for a fact, I can change it.
How?
There must be a way. If I have knowledge of an outside universe, there is some connection to that universe in some real way that eventually someone could exploit that.
But what that connection was basically, and this is, stay with us, listeners, please. What if that connection was in the form of a black man named Morpheus that just basically told it to you?
I would have to have evidence. If he hands me the pill, I swallow the pill and I wake up in fucking gelatinous goo on the side of a giant battery cell.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to believe that.
But how would you know that? At that point, how would you know that was real?
That's an interesting question.
Because I always thought, what I thought would be interesting about The Matrix mm-hmm. is that you find out in a third one that Zion is just like an overflow matrix to catch the people to give them the illusion of control, and they were going to blow the lid off that. I was kind of disappointed.
Which there's no way. Like, that's the thing. There's no way to know if you're...
That's what I'm saying.
How many layers deep does the Matrix go is what you're asking?
That's what I'm saying.
It's impossible to know, and it's pointless to think about until you know there's another layer.
So now, like, why wouldn't you just want to be ignorance is bliss? Why wouldn't you just want to enjoy the woman in the red dress and the steak?
I want to be at the top layer.
But you would never know.
The top layer, would you not say the higher up the layers you go, the more real it becomes?
But what if it just is not any more real? It just sucks more. That's what I'm saying. Like,
it's closer to reality.
You don't know that. You could never know.
If it's a hierarchical
tree. Once Morpheus gave you the pill and you woke up in the goo, I think you're fucked.
Well, Morpheus could have just slipped me acid and I'd be like, I would have no idea what was going on. Like, that doesn't guarantee that I'm in another universe. You're right.
I think I'm in ignorance is bliss.
Really?
Which is kind of like where I am now. I mean, I think that, like, I don't want the proof that I'm real or not real. I'd rather just, my life is pretty good. And even if it wasn't, it's better than being dead. And that's my, sure. That's the way I kind of want to live life.
Okay.
If there's a real world beyond this one that sucks and everybody's got holes in their arms and they got bad haircuts and shitty clothes and they're drinking stuff that looks like it's oatmeal mixed with semen.
Yep.
I don't want to live there. I want to live back in good old 1999.
You want to have a steak and a glass of wine.
Yeah.
Sit at the table with Agent Smith.
Yeah. And maybe I'll be taken over by an agent one day and die arbitrarily or, you know, I'll crash the system and a whole crop will be lost. But it's
sure.
just the same as, like, what if an asteroid hits right now? Static. No, what I mean, really, I mean, life is kind of arbitrary when you think about it. And that's why, like...
Totally. There's no point to it in the long term.
And
yeah.
I got this curse that I can see the good and bad of all sides. So I kind of, like, could see myself as a nihilist. It just doesn't seem fun.
I don't like nihilism at all because there are things to
like
do
it.
While you're
I'm just
here.
Saying that I, in my darker moments, I suspect it's a perfectly valid way to not live your life.
Yeah, to not live your life. Like, that's the point.
Right.
The one thing that you do know is that you exist in whatever, if this is the Matrix, if this is
And if you touch your
reality,
pee-pee, it feels good.
Exactly.
That's the one thing I know.
One thing you know.
And if I eat a steak, it's delicious and juicy.
No, but the one thing you know is you have this life. That is the one thing that you are absolutely 100% sure of.
I just detect...
Be it a simulation or the real thing, you have it. And so you should enjoy it.
I just detect a little bit of intellectual inconsistency in you saying you want to know the truth. But when you wake up from that pod, you have no there now you just basically you don't know if this is the real world. You can't tell. So again, why would you want to go up a level?
Why
it'd be kind of like, because like someone built a computer to bring this full scale. Someone built a computer, a 16-bit computer in Minecraft. All right.
Okay.
So let's say 100 years from now, we've simulated
AI in Minecraft.
That simulated an AI in Minecraft. And okay, so if you're in the game, you're an avatar in the game at the bottom layer, which I guess we'd say is the top layer. What difference would it be if you were at the first layer or the second layer?
I don't think there is any real difference.
So if you were in a system where you could fully simulate an experience and you woke up in a next level, does someone claim that this is the top level? Why would you believe that that's true? Especially if its existence sucks more.
Because I have no evidence to suggest anything else. Right now, I am believing, let's say...
The evidence is the fact that you just woke up from a fantasy world.
No.
I think there's no going back once you go there.
That's not true. Okay, let's say I'm three levels deep in a fantasy world right now. Computer simulation.
So now we're like Inception?
Or three sure, dream I'm worlds at the fourth deep. Dream layer. I'm just above Limbo.
Uh-huh.
I'm three layers deep. If I... find out, if I have empirical evidence that says there is a layer above me that is different, whatever, if it's terrible, if it's great, I don't care. If there's a layer above me, I want to get to that layer.
Why? It's
and once I'm at that
goal.
Layer, I now believe I am at the top layer, regardless of whether or not there is another layer above me. Because I don't have any evidence to know that there is...
Okay,
or
it's
is
like
not a layer
if,
above
if,
me.
If God himself appeared to you,
okay,
and proved that he was God and sure. by doing some miracle, and you had the bright idea to kill him, and you're like, somehow, you'd be like, I just killed... God. Well, so you just did.
Okay.
And like, okay, now I slayed God. There's no God left in the universe. How would you know? How would you know that you just killed Zeus and Thor is still
out
there?
Well, it depends on your definition of God, but,
what I'm saying is, like, it seems like it's arbitrary to say that the evidence that you might not be in the top layer is the fact that you weren't before and you didn't know it. It's like, that's like saying that, I don't know, I can't think of a good example. I don't know if
I'm
the listeners
are even
with us now.
I'm trying to think of an analogy to get across what I'm saying to you, like...
No, I
if
understand.
There's no evidence to suggest something,
I just think there's
you can't believe it, right?
But I think, I guess what I'm saying is you've got metaphysical evidence that the possibility is at least there. Like right now, there is nothing to suggest that we have
but the possibility
life
is still
this.
There. The possibility is always
but there's no
there.
Evidence to suggest it.
Okay.
Like for example, the reason I don't,
the
believe,
Matrix is
I don't believe in
to
heaven and hell
it.
Because there's no evidence outside of some written documents that say it's basically if Morpheus come and say, look, there's a Matrix. Oh, well, show it to me. I can't do that. You have to believe it. That's
I disagree. The fact that, okay, the fact that you can think of it, if that can be used as evidence.
No, I'm not saying thinking about it. I'm saying that, like, it exists. You woke up from the Matrix. So how would you know that this isn't? I don't know. To me, it sounds good in my head.
No, because once you're in the next level up, you haven't woken up from that level. You don't know if there's another level above you. But just because there could be right now. We could be in a computer simulation.
But we've,
that does not mean that I'm going to assume that I am.
I'm going to let the list be one
listen. We have conceived of this possibility.
Right.
It doesn't mean that it is actually possible.
Well, that's like saying that we saw gravity on this one on Earth. Mm-hmm. If we went to another planet, gravity is just theoretically possible. I mean, you know, we could go to Mars and it's just totally weightless, you know?
No, we can measure gravity. We can quantify gravity.
I'm going to let the listeners decide because, like I said, I see your viewpoint. I just think that it's a little inconsistent. And
I
think
disagree.
Your standards for evidence are kind of...
No. No, I don't consider metaphysical evidence. I'm sorry. I need empirical, physical evidence of
like
something.
Like I said, I mean, it's like saying... I'm out of analogies.
If you give me a statistical probability...
It's like if you had a third door in a Volkswagen saying that four doors
oh
are
God.
Impossible.
Oh, my God.
Do we have time for listener feedback?
What's time? Does time matter? This is all just a Matrix-like universe.
Oh, my God. Is
the
this podcast
that we've thought
real?
Of it means that this podcast
is there an Aaron in a gym? Was there ever a Peter Street? I don't remember. There's some guys, some assholes voice at the start of the podcast introduces us.
Along these lines, weren't we at war with Eurasia at some point?
You know what?
We need to. I don't think we ever were. I'm pretty sure we weren't, but
we need to. We need to devote more time to than we're going to this cast because I want to give it short shrift. Personal arrogance apparently has surrendered.
Yeah,
they've taken their ball and going home. They don't acknowledge our presence anymore. They're like, I don't know why. I think it's something to do with their girlfriends being mad that they were playing war, and they cracked a whip and now they're stopping. But it had a really fun beginning. You know, I think we broke them when we invaded their podcast.
Yeah,
they were rattled.
I'm planting the victory flag on their craterous moon-like ass.
Yeah, we might have a resolution eventually, but for right now, we're not at war. We're going to pick another target eventually to go to war with, and then we'll have always been at war with them.
Yep.
So calibrate your understandings of reality accordingly. do we have time for listener feedback?
Do we have any? We have a little bit, don't we?
Because like one of these things is actually going to be a discussion.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I say let's do it.
Well, how long have we been recording?
100 years. Does time matter?
Yes, it does. How long have we been recording, goddammit?
Listeners have no concept of time anymore.
Yes, they do.
We're probably at like 50 minutes.
Okay.
I think we could do it.
All right. So, two pieces of listener mail. Anna Molly from Ipsa, fucking Tucky, Michigan, posted on her Facebook that this is kind of... I kind of dig it. She said that she enjoys knowing that she can listen to an hour of my voice every week. My voice, not yours, Jim.
Creepy.
My voice.
If it was my voice, I wouldn't say this, but creepy.
It's a woman, and she's digging my voice. I can't say that's creepy.
No, that's stalker territory. That is not, like, admirer. That's crossed the line.
I got a sexy voice. What can I do, Jim?
Maybe, like, one layer down on the universe scale, it would be... Interesting.
I think it's hot. You rock on, Anna Molly. I'll always be there for you for at least an hour a week.
I don't kid yourself. It's a couple minutes.
Solid hardcore ear fucking for an hour every week.
Jesus Christ, man.
The
in an alternate universe, you did not say that.
Yeah. So thanks for listening.
We also had, can I move on, please?
Yeah.
We also had Stoffa send us an email
this week.
The
Don of the forums, holding it down, pimping it.
All over the Steam sale, too.
Every day he's hustling.
And he says, dear Blue Yonder, you know what I hate? People who applaud at the end of a movie at the theaters. What do you think about that?
Well, let's talk about movie theater pet peeves, because I gotta say, I used to be the fucking movie Batman. Like, I've had physical altercations from mother bitches not respecting the sanctity of the cinema experience. And I used to fantasize, like, if I got rich, one of the many things I'd do other than migrate west 1 hour every week to compensate for my fucked up biological clock, was I would found the chain of theaters, high-end theaters. Mm-hmm. We could drink beer out of a glass, and there would be bouncers in each theater. Like two or three that you start talking, you take a cell phone call, you start texting, they will grab you by the scruff and eject your ass.
I better finish this email before
they'd have night vision goggles.
He says, you knuckleheads, don't you realize the actors in the movie can't hear or see you? Get a haircut, you hippies.
So, like, on the scale of annoyances, I guess that's, like, I always think it's weird. And the first time I remember doing
it... I don't. I actually like it.
You like it? Because I noticed the classier the theater, the more likely you're going to get applause. Like, you go to the Castleton Arts Theater, 9 times out of 10, the people are going to applaud. You go to the ghetto $1.50 second-run movie, no one's going to applaud.
People are going to kick their popcorn bucket over and walk out the
They're
going
to fart loudly and then exit the theater.
While taking a cell phone call.
My advice for you, Don Stoffa, is to go to less classy theaters. I have a feeling you're probably going to the rave. If I kind of, you know, through Peter, understand kind of like how you're rolling, and that's a pretty classy joint. You need to declass that thing. Start going to, don't they have the Regal Shiloh shithole still going and like Avon?
Oh, I'm sure they do. Yeah.
Yeah. So slide down the classy scale. People stop applauding.
Go to East Washington Street. There's a $2 theater there.
Yeah.
I guarantee you get no applause.
It smells
there.
Like a basement, even though it's above ground and the seats don't where you, the people not applaud. So, yeah, you just go to a less civilized, most ostly theater.
But see, I like it. It's a holdover. My first experiences
right.
with it.
No one knows. This is, like, not even Matrix. You can – the actors don't – like, if you're at Cannes or Canes or Midwest Movie Fest and there's, like, the director
and
the cinematographers
the
and they're sitting in the back row, clap. Uh-huh. There's nobody there, man.
I know, but it's almost just a symbolic gesture to the people who created the movie. I mean, movies are enormous undertakings.
Yes.
Huge. Yes. Even small budget movies are just enormous undertakings by a vast number of people. And I feel like if you enjoy a movie, clap. Why not?
Because
it lets
the only thing
other
I can
people
say,
in the audience
yes,
know that you appreciate it.
I guess
it,
so. But it seems like what happens is three or four people spontaneously applause, and then everybody's like, well, I guess I got to do, you know, it's like the one hand clapping.
No, here's, okay. At the end of, like, let's say a Star Wars movie. I have never been to a Star Wars movie where there's not clapping at the end.
Well, and that's the perfect freaking, that's unwarranted.
I agree.
No one
on the
should
new
have
ones.
Applauded. Now, like, there's a couple.
I think the like special editions, yeah. those were good enough where you applaud.
Oh, yeah.
Now the changes were kind of bullshit in a lot of cases, but
a lot of people applauded them.
But here's my thing: like, nothing at the end of a movie that you really, really enjoy, and you're about ready to get out of the theater and talk about it with your friends, and like, oh, look at all these awesome things that I noticed, and I love this part of the movie. Would you rather silently,
no, I got you.
Like, zombify, shamble your way out of the theater? Like, or would you rather it go out
right.
in uproarious applause?
I think that
what
for mid,
lifts or detracts from
I
the
think
mood?
For art house films and midnight showings, a clapping is part of the social experience.
I'm not
just like
clap
if you go to a comedy,
PM at a matinee.
Like I hate going to comedies when I'm the only person there and no one else is laughing. Like like a 500 people laughing at something makes it funnier.
Sure, absolutely.
And like when you hear, like when we went
that's
to
the
Inception, there was a one particular point where everyone gasped every single time.
Yeah,
and it was like that part that magnifies the emotion when you realize, oh my god. I think that there's a social experience, but I'm kind of closer to Staffa. If you're just at the multiplex watching Little Fockers and you're clapping at the end of that, you just should be drug out in the street, put against the wall and shot.
Yeah, you need to curb yourself.
All right. But on the other hand, like I said, like me, people freaking talking, people coming in. There's this trend now that like people come into the movies like late-ish. And they talk in, like, outdoor voices. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just talking, like, hey, oh, where's a seat? There's a seat over here. Like, why can't people whisper? My son's 4 years old, and he knows his fucking indoor voice.
Yeah.
It's like they're trying to draw attention to the fact that how late and rude they are. And, like, people that talk, and, like, I've seen a person take a cell phone call and actually have, like, a minute-long discussion.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you take that out to the lobby?
You need to go to a classier theater.
I guess. Well, I mean, I've seen it in classy theaters.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you get the guys.
But
like
on the other hand, I feel like
care.
We dodged a bullet because when those laser pointers became big, there was like a 6 month stretch where people thought it was hilarious to put laser pointers on the screen. And then apparently, when the laser pointers got to be $2, it became passé. Mm-hmm. Because I saw a future in which, like, there would be 50, 60 laser points on the screen at all, and I was going to have to kill
there's
people.
Actually no picture on the screen.
It's just
the light from the laser
all
pointers.
Red and green laser, like a psychotic Christmas laser show.
That'd be why amazing.
That's like a...
All the shapes of, like, poodles and stars.
And skulls.
Yeah.
Doesn't that give you hope for humanity? That, like, that possibility could have happened. Like I feel like Sarah Connor.
It did happen in an alternate universe.
I feel like Sarah Connor at the end of Terminator 2, where, like, you know, we put off Armageddon for a little bit of time. We all, as humanity, said, hell no.
Yeah.
We're not going to do the laser pointer shit.
I like it.
But we still freaking talk at theater, and people, it drives me crazy. If you... Like, I can understand if you forget to put your cell phone on vibrate, even though they remind you every freaking theater time you go in, they remind you to do it. But if you get a phone call, hit silent and then take it outside if it's that damn important. You know? Don't text. I don't want you texting in the theater. I don't want you talking in the theater. If you want to do that, stay at home.
Apparently, you don't want them clapping in a theater either.
Not clapping. I just think you're stupid. You can do it. I just think you're dumb.
I don't, dude.
Like
to
I said,
me, seeing
art
a movie
house
is a social experience.
And midnight theater
then,
showings.
Then watch the movies in your fucking living room.
Don't
go to the theater.
I'm not saying it bothers me. Like, stop it. Bothers them. I just think the people that do it are kind of dumb. outside of...
I disagree.
Outside of, like, when you're with a bunch of fans, like, at a midnight showing or, like, a opening... Like, opening weekends. I'll extend it to opening weekends. Past that, you know, if you have a natural reaction to the movie, laughter, you know...
Diarrhea.
I like hearing whoops during, like, a super awesome action sequence.
I don't know that I've ever heard that.
You know, but yeah, other than that, yeah, I don't really want your extra soundtrack.
Huh.
I want a laugh track, you know, a laugh track, okay, for a comedy.
Okay.
Ah, dead air.
Yeah, I was going to see
how long... Love that dead air.
I was going to see how long you let it go.
Yeah, it's a comfortable silence. I think we're at that point, the listeners. We can have a comfortable silence.
We're just going to keep casting, sit here on the couch,
yeah,
right next to you.
Yeah, right.
You go about your business.
So,
do you have any other feedback or anything?
No, we need to... apparently, people don't know what these ninjas are. We need to post pictures and get them hot for it.
Because they're Shaunimals ninjas. You've seen them around. I guarantee it.
Yeah, but, I mean, we need to post pictures and links because this is like a, you know... these are actually kind of desirable, and we're not asking for much. Like, 5 Facebook friends.
Easy peasy.
Whoa. We had some street noise there intruding on the cast.
Yes, we'll mark it up to street noise.
Yes. Anyway, they're actually, you know, they're free. We're going to give them away. We just need 5 Facebook friends. I know you've got at least 5 friends. Tell them to, like, click on this link and like it, and you'll get a free cool... You'll get a free stuff. You can, like, Solomon-esque cut it in half and share it with them. We don't care. But we would like to...
They are kind of star-shaped. You could each take... One takes the head... 2 take the arms, 2 take the feet.
And I think they grow back. Like, if you cut them in half, the other, it's like a starfish.
That's what's special about these stuffed animals. Yeah,
they're sentient. They'll scream when you do it, but then they grow. It's okay. They don't feel a pain like us.
We should just start sending out starfish to where they can literally divide it among their friends.
Oh, the Amish friendship bread. Wasn't your mom into that? It was basically... You don't remember that.
That's the most random thing I've ever heard.
My mom would come home from church with a Ziploc bag full of goo. And you split half of it, and you'd grow it into bread, but it would keep making more. It was like the blob.
That's not how it happens.
Yes, it does.
Physics does not work
that
way. Look
it up. Amish friendship bread. It's some kind of live, yeasty thing that grows, and you can split it and give it to other people, and the other half grows, and you can make infinite bread out of this stuff.
Infinite bread.
Infinite bread.
That's how Jesus did it, man.
Jesus
was Amish.
It's Jesus friendship bread. Seriously, but I can't believe your mom didn't. So no. I always had these Ziploc baggies of goo left in, like, out in a warm area of the counter, and they'd keep replicating.
Maybe she was. I mean, we had a swimming pool with a cover on it that we could never use. So
it was just a fat of Amish friendship bread.
Yeah.
And, like, why was it Amish? I mean, you know.
Because the Amish invented it.
I don't know. That
it's like,
seems.
Why is
I don't
furniture
think that, they don't know. They don't
well,
believe
because
in,
they make it.
Amish don't believe in self-replicating bread.
Does it have any electronics?
They don't believe in buttons, electricity, or self-replicating bread. It's a fact.
I don't know. They do enough replicating that I'm pretty sure they could get their bread to do it. If they really tried.
Oh, that's not the secret ingredient of Amish friendship bread, is it? Like 300 years ago, the Amish elder spooged into bread, and that original stock has
since.
Just been growing. Like, sometimes, it's a true story, you cut into a loaf of Amish friendship
and
bread.
It just oozes.
No, you can find, like, hair and teeth
in
pockets
here.
Of it occasionally. Just like those tumors that grow, and they cut them open, they find hair and teeth and, like, an eyeball.
Oh, my God.
How do we get here? We were trying to get people to get Shaunimals.
I don't know. I'm starting to believe there's an alternate universe above this one, though. This one's fucked up.
5 friends, and we'll give you Shaunimals and friendship bread with teeth and hair. Optional. Who knows what'll grow? It's like those sea monkey kits, man.
Wow. Okay, we've got to end this cast. Because it's gone off the rails.
Yeah, it's on a crazy train. If you got feedback, where do you send it?
Send it to blueyonder@baldmove.com, or you can visit our forums, forums.baldmove.com, or you can go to Twitter. We're at
twitter.com/baldmove.
You can go to Facebook, /11389764
THX1138. Seriously, just go to Facebook and search for Bald Move. We're the first result.
Like us. Yeah. And what else do we have?
Anything punch else? In the face, listener. Boom.
Right. 1-800 punch in the face.
Yeah.
All right. With that said, till next time, I'm Jim Jones.
And I'm Aaron Hubbard. Ciao. All right, phone is set to silent but deadly.
Speaking of silent but deadly, there may be some gas expenditure. Oh, God. I like to...
What else is new? We should be casting this.
We are casting actually.
Because what else is fucking new? Did you eat a bushel of broccoli before it came over?
No, I had a can of chili.
And then broccoli on top.
And then broccoli and Brussels sprouts. No, I wanted to say that I really like calling farts vaporous. Like... Describing a fart as vapor instead of gas makes it much more disturbing.
It sounds a little chunkier. Like it's got some viscosity.
It's going to hang in the air. It's almost going to stick to you.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, that's a little known thing about farts. When you smell a fart, it's actually becoming a part of you.
Well, not only that,
like,
but
it's exchanging atoms.
Yes, the fact that you're
with
smelling
your body.
It, that's what creeps me out about farts. The fact that you're smelling it implies that fecal matter is entering your olfactory and respiratory systems.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like, Jesus.
I think it's actually more accurate to describe it as a vapor. You've got pieces of fecal matter hanging onto
it's a fluid.
Molecules of gas. Yeah, it's almost a fluid. I think that's what they were breathing in the abyss.
when
they went extra deep. They had to do fluid breathing.
Yeah.
It was fecal vapor.
It was fluorofarty carbon.
Oh, God.
Rats can swim in it all day long. They act like they're drowning for the first 30 seconds, but then they get used
fine.
To it. Yeah.
That's also another thing.
Your body will remember the time in the womb when you smelled all your mother's farts.
Farts don't ever go away either. Like, it's not like...
They dissipate.
I really don't think they do, though. Here's my pseudoscience on this. I think that farts actually just... There's an amount of farts constantly in the air, and when you release some, it brings the fart level of the air up just a slight notch. Like, the entirety of the air on the planet, the fart level comes up just a little bit before the planet can, like, filter it out, right?
I guess.
So, like, if you're indoors and people are constantly farting, you could bring the fart level up, like, the density, the percentage of fart to air ratio.
Oh, wow.
Could just get out of whack. But you get used to it. That's the thing. You won't smell it after a while, but it's still there.
I actually had something to class up this conversation a little bit, but that was so stupid I forgot. Oh, God.
Yeah. You just get used to it. They don't go away.
No, I guess not. They
it's my pseudoscience.
See, what I was going to say is we need like a Scosville rating for farts.
Yeah, we do.
Like, you know, like the maximum concentration. Like, how diluted would a fart have to be before the average person can't smell it? It's like the highest rating is like 16 million. I'm going to call it the Jimsville. The Jonesville rating. The Jonesville rating for farts. You've cut some 3.5 million.
I have an infamous one, man. The net party fart. Ask Peter. Peter will tell you about the net party fart.
You've had some infamous in the time living. That one night where you ate like a bushel of broccoli and just wasn't stopping. I was like, you've let like 70 liters of ass air out of you, and you've got like a 50 liter body. I mean, what the hell?
Dude, the net party fart was epic. It almost made him get out of his own car.
Oh.
Like, we were riding down the street going to a net party, LAN party, and I just unleashed, and it was the most disgusting thing. Next to Orford's feet, it was the most disgusting thing I've ever smelled.
See, this is the
thing. And it was my own. Like, normally your own don't smell that bad, but that one was terrible.
I'm anti-typically masculine in that what you describe as, kind of frat boy antics, like farting on each other and punching each other. That just, that pisses me off.
Oh, I totally agree.
If someone went right up to my face and cut a fart, they would probably meet death or I would die trying to kill them. That's just like, God, because we just said, you just coated me in fecal matter.
Exactly.
You coated me with your fart vapor.
Yeah, get your vaporous asshole away from me.
So, we like the Jonesville rating?
The Jonesville rating.
I'm gonna start giving. I'm gonna start rating farts in terms of that. It's like, oh my god, I have to dilute that 3.5 million times before it'd be undetectable.
You have to carry around like a gallon bucket of air that you can just heave into the room.
I think there should be a calculation. Like we're in like a 10 or like a 12 by 8 room now.
Yeah. So how many?
Like figure out how many cubic feet of air.
Yep.
You know, and how long it takes to dissipate. That would be you could derive a rough calculation.
Wow.